This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's John Dalby Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see johncast.net.
Joining me in the studio today is Professor Paola Caselli from the University of Leeds, and she was just giving a talk about star formation and water. So can you just tell us a little bit about what you're working on?
Okay, with pleasure. So I work on the very early stages of star formation, so try to understand the physical structure and chemical composition just before a star and protoplanetary disk is born. And this is, of course, is very important for us because we need these measurements and observations to constrain models of star formation.
You mentioned a protoplanetary disk. Can you just explain briefly?
Oh, sure. Okay. So when we talk about star formation, we have to consider that stars form within clouds. And clouds, as we can see also in clouds in our atmosphere, they have not very regular shapes, but we can consider or say approximate as, say, spheroidal type of objects. Now, these spheroidal type of objects, they have an initial rotation. So they rotate a bit, and at the same time, to form a star, of course, they have to contract. So if you put together these two things, contraction and rotation, something happens, because they are not solid bodies. They, you know, kind of fluffy structures. So if you rotate and spin something that is not really a solid body, think about a pizza dough, what you get a flattened structure, and you get what we, in fact we call a protoplanetary disk. So this is like a torus of material that will form around the center of, say, center of gravity where the star is going to form. And this torus that is just orbiting around the star is a very thick and dense region where there is dust and gas, the one that basically was in the cloud, the original cloud. But now what happened is that the density becomes so large that the dust grains start to coagulate and become bigger grains, and then at some point they will become pebbles and then rocks and then planetesimals, and then finally you form the planet. So all the factory that say to make planets is within these protoplanetary disks.
So this disk is a disk of material, exactly. Like a ring of material, a torus.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
Fantastic.
So what I have done so far, for example, among, you know, various results, one of the first things that we observe is that some of the molecules that we observe, and in particular carbon monoxide that is very abundant in these regions, appears to go away in the center, basically disappears in the center of these clouds, dark, dense regions where stars are going to form, but they have not formed yet. And the reason for that, it seems that the most likely event is that the CO molecules, they encounter very tiny little dust grains, like the ones that are in the air, but, you know, very tiny, like about in size, say, 1,000 times smaller than sun grains. And once they encounter these grains in these molecular clouds in the interstellar medium, where the temperatures are very low, they just stick on them, and they're not able to come off in the gas phase because there is not enough energy. The temperatures are in centigrade, it's like minus 260 degrees, so it's really freezing. And these dust grains, these little tiny dust particles, started to form nice ice mantles all around formed by these molecules that just come from the gas phase and stick on them. So this was one of the first results. And then we also measured something that is interesting for us in a sense that we also measure in water oceans. So in our Earth oceans, we know that the water, some of the water is heavy water, so it's HDO. And if one measure the ratio between HDO and the normal water, which is H2O, so D is the term. And so what we find is that this ratio is actually larger by about a factor of 10 compared to what we measured in our universe. So the cosmic abundance of the deuterium compared to hydrogen is, say, 10 times lower in the universe compared to our Earth ocean. So one thing that we wanted to measure is also this the so-called deuterium fraction. So how much deuterium, say, deuterated molecules there are compared to the more abundant, normal hydrogenated molecules to see if there is some correspondence between what we see at the early phases of star formation and what we see actually on Earth.
You mentioned deuterium, and deuterium is just hydrogen with an extra neutron in there.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just a heavy, like we call it one isotope of the hydrogen. So it's a heavier form of a hydrogen.
Okay.
So we couldn't measure the water until some years ago because it was very difficult, but we could measure other species and other deuterated species, and we in fact measure very high level of deuteration. That is something that really is a phenomenon that is linked to the fact that some species like CO molecules are frozen. There is some chemistry, so I'm not going to explain all the details on that, but it's really a one-to-one correlation. As you freeze out molecules from the gas phase to the dust, you increase the level of deuteration. So, of course, now what we want to do is to measure the deuteration in the water in these regions where there are not yet stars inside. And so, first of all, we measured the water, and this was thanks to Herschel Space Observatory, and so we needed very high sensitivity and also high spectral resolution. So this is something that we need to measure the profile of the line that we observe, because it's from the profile of the line that we can understand where the water is coming from within the cloud.
Just picking up on something you just said there. Yes. So you said you needed high spectral resolution, so you need to be able to see in detail the emission lines that you get. So these molecules are emitting a spectrum, or they're absorbing a spectrum.
Exactly. We see lines like, when we go to the doctor and do like electrocardiogram. This is kind of the type of lines that we see. And if we want to see like all the peaks and all the profile of the line, we need to sample the line with high resolution. And that is the so-called, say, spectral resolution. And Herschel had a very powerful spectrometer that was able to sample the line at a very small fraction of, kilometer per second, which is actually what we need to explore regions where motions are very tiny, because these are regions very quiescent, very cold, where nothing really happens yet, but it's going to happen, because it's like, we call them like a cradle for the star. So the width of the line depends on how fast the molecules move inside. So we typically see very, very narrow lines because there is very tiny little motion.
So when you're looking at these lines, you see sort of an emission intensity against a velocity.
Right, yes. So we have like the line is like a bell line. So we have an intensity and also a width. And the width depends on the motions of the molecules within the cloud. Because if you have a different motion, say, for example, if the molecules is approaching you, you will have like a blue shifted. And this is something that, every day we experience that with the, Doppler effect that we experience when we have like a siren passing by and all this.
So it goes from being a higher pitch to a lower pitch.
Yes. So you can consider like in a cloud, like a mixture of many, many molecules all moving with a certain velocity that depends on the temperature as well of the cloud. So you will have like blue shifted emission from the molecules that are approaching you, red shifted emission from the molecules that are going away from you. So at the end, you see the collection of the motions, and then you see a broadened line that tells you also the temperature of the cloud, and if there are any systematic motion, like, for example, gravitational contraction, as we expect in these regions that are going to form stars. So we observed this water line that actually had a very specific profile that can be reproduced considering, in fact, this contraction motion. And from the profile, the emission, and also a bit of absorption that we observed, we were able to measure the abundance profile of the water across the cloud, and we could measure the abundance. So we measure like water vapor abundance that was about half Earth mass, which doesn't sound very big because, the cloud is huge compared to, say, the Earth mass. We talk, in fact, about the total mass of the cloud bit more than 5 solar masses. So
this cloud is really huge.
It's a larger cloud that is probably going to form a star similar to our sun.
How far does it spread? Like how large a cloud?
Right.
Is
so the size is about say a bit more than 10,000 astronomical units. And this is interesting because it's probably 15 in radius, 15 astronomical units.
And by astronomical units, you mean the distance?
The distance between, the Sun and the Earth. And this is a very interesting, actually, number because if we think about our own solar system, if we think about what is the largest, structure that we have in our solar system, we have this so-called Oort cloud that is a collection of small rocks and comets, icy worlds, basically, and this Oort cloud is supposed to have actually a radius a bit larger than that, but around, say, 20,000-30,000 AU, possibly. We don't really know exactly, but so this gives us, say, some kind of link between, say, the size of our solar system and the size of this cloud. So we have material, basically, to form even more, say, material to form a star like our sun and the planetary system, our planets. We also know that some of the material of these clouds is going to blow away because once the protostar, so the young star, future sun, will form, it will form with very strong winds. And these strong winds are going to blow away part of the material. So it's good that we actually have extra because then we can, the material to form most likely like a planetary system like our own. And we know that there is plenty of water, not in the gas phase. So the water vapor, as I said, is only half Earth masses, but this implies a ice water, so water in solid form, that is more than the 2 Jupiter masses. So we have plenty of water.
Any gas or any liquid, then you won't actually pick this up in the...
Exactly, because these are like gas phase fissures. So this is the line that we are observing is from water molecules that are rotating in the gas phase. So we can't see the ice. Water ice has been seen toward the molecular cloud, but much less dense than the one that we are seeing. Because to see something in ice, you have to see fissures in absorption. And these fissures in absorption, especially for the water ice, are in the near-infrared regime. Near-infrared means that you have to have not, say, too much dust along the line of sight because the near-infrared photons can be absorbed quite soon. So you can see absorption fissure looking at the background stars. So stars that are behind the cloud that you're looking at, you look at the spectrum of the star, and then the spectrum of the star shows these absorption fissures, and if they are close to 2 micron, so sorry, the units, this is a little bit, but it's say in the near-infrared regime, without going into too many details.
And by near-infrared, you mean the area of the spectrum in the infrared that is closest to the visible,
exactly. And so we see these broad absorption bands that can be reproduced exactly in the laboratory with water ice. So that's a very neat result from other groups. So we know that there is some water ice, but how much, for example, in this pre-stellar course that these clouds that are going to form stars, we couldn't know because if we look at toward the center, the extinction due to the dust is so large that we can't see any background star at all.
So all of the background is actually being absorbed by things
exactly.
that are in front, all of the
emissions. Exactly.
Emission.
It's completely dark. In the, the light of the stars are, dimmed by orders of magnitude. So we would need like very, very powerful telescopes that don't even exist at the
moment.
That's
like 10 or 100 or...
100,000 times. So it's really... large. It's really large. So the only way to measure the water was through this water vapor in the far infrared. And actually, we needed a satellite because water lines in the far infrared cannot be observed from the ground because the water that we have in the atmosphere, they just absorb everything. That's why we needed Herschel to go up there and look at that.
Far infrared, by far infrared, we just mean the area in the spectrum, the infrared, which is furthest.
But exactly, yes. In fact, it is near and far is exactly like that refer to our, visible range of wavelengths that we are very well used to. So yes, as you said before, near is the one, the part of the infrared that is close to the visible spectrum, and far is actually farther out. We are getting close, say, if we move even farther, we are getting close to radio. So the wavelength, it means the wavelength of the line gets larger and larger until we reach the radio. So now the next step will be to actually measure HDO, and for that, we just got some observing time with the APEX antenna, which is in the Atacama Desert, next to the big ALMA, the large millimeter array in Chile at high latitudes. So we hope that we can observe and detect the HDO, and then measure the HDO over H2O ratio, and then it will constrain this ratio at the very beginning before a star and planet form.
Okay. Thank you very much for telling us all about your work.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.